The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
Let's turn our attention very quickly this morning as we chat with Riyad Mohammed, an agriculture consultant this morning. He is locked in with Freedom 106.5 FM. Kick that interview off one time. It's 15:16 after the hour of 7 o'clock. Good morning to you, Riyad.
Hi, good morning. How are you doing?
I'm good. Forgive me with the cameras this morning. We're operating from a different studio, so it's not coming on. All right. So with that being said, this morning, let's get right into the crux of things. Let's talk a little bit about who you are.
Okay, so I'm Riyad Mohammed, farmer, agricultural consultant, lecturer, and business owner. Yeah, keep it simple.
Nice. I like that. Business owner, agricultural consultant. And let's talk about it. I mean, we are getting tips on the inside of the government's offices that the budget can be read on the first Monday of October, which will be October 6th. You know, yep. let's look at the food import bill. We look at the economy at this time, and one has to wonder, what would this deficit budget look like? And if whatever it is, what would the agricultural wish list be?
Tough question, loaded question, but let me try. All right, so in terms of what I expect for this fiscal's budget, I don't think there will be a big increase in investment, but I do think that the industry will get greater emphasis and attention, right? So the national budget last year, 2024 into 2025, would have been allocated for agriculture, $1.184 billion to assist, obviously, with the continuous expansion of the agri-industry and to some extent, some form of digital transformation of the agri sector. But most of this money, as you all know, was directed towards running the departments within the public sector.
When it comes to I'm thinking now. So when it comes to what we could ask of government and in terms of allocation, I mean, we look at what is happening on the food import bill. It's very, very high. Most of the foods that we consume is imported because of the growth time of agriculture in this country. What can we do to speed up that process? One, and again, what type of allocation could the agricultural sector look for that is realistic and one that will at least assist us with local food stability?
All right, so before I give you that tough answer, let me just go into a little bit into the food import bill and what consumers want. Because if consumers don't want something, the import bill will not be that high, right? Mm. So let's chat on the food import bill. Now, you know the food import bill is around $7.3 billion, and this was a figure from 2024. And it is a substantial rise every single year. So it really demonstrates how dependent our population is on those imported food and beverages, right? So let's look a bit into what consumers want. So when it comes to domestic and local production, it sometimes cannot meet the food demands of certain or some commodities, simply because we have a growing population and, most important, our changing dietary patterns, particularly when local consumers like ourselves are influenced externally when it comes to our tastes and preferences. You see that one, partner? That is a big one, mm-hmm. Right? If we eat local, we will not import so much food, right? Mm. So the demand for food has been growing beyond what the local capacity could provide on some commodities. And it's really due to rapid urbanization, population growth, so it makes some of these importation of these items a bit necessary for some. Right, so it really comes down to the wages increase, the dietary passion shift towards more meat, dairy, processed foods, and luxury imports. Right, so that is why we have that growing food import bill. Now, what will happen if we continue to import? A lot of things will happen. Long story short, you have natural shocks like droughts, flood, pests, and disease, and that could affect your crop and livestock sources and cycles and food availability. So that's some of the major forces that necessitating some imports. As you all know, you could feel the sun today is not the sun from long time, right? Mm. Severe climate change makes agriculture much more vulnerable across the globe, especially in developing countries like ours. Also, when international trade agreements are signed and trade barriers are lifted, imports become much more accessible and affordable. Many countries import essential commodities and items, keeping the prices and supplies very stable, right? So you see, when you ask somebody, hey, you want to purchase a cabbage or a cauliflower locally or imported one? Many people now will say, hey, what, partner? The imported one a bit cheaper, I had to take that one, you know? So you see, all of these things kind of contribute to why we are in this position, yeah?
Now, with that being said, in terms of consumption and choice and what persons prefer, what do you think is causing the fact that the imported stuff are way cheaper than what we would grow locally? Help our listening audience to understand that, please.
Right. So in some cases, the imported foods may be more reasonably priced or reliably available than the domestic counterparts, like the local products from here, due to subsidies, economies of scale, and efficient supply networks in exporting countries. Right, so not all farmers in Trinidad and Tobago have access to a farmer's badge. When you don't have access to a farmer's badge, you can't get the dozens and dozens of incentives and subsidies. Farming is already tough as it is, so any bit of financial help from the ministry or those government offices goes a really long way, right? And when we say the term agriculture in Trinidad and Tobago, everybody's studying crop production. They say forget livestock production, that don't even exist. Right, so we need so much more help in the livestock sector. You know, you have pretty alarming feed costs is supremely high. Even trained and semi-skilled labor is a bit tough to get sometimes. And with livestock production or livestock systems, that's literally a 24/7 occupation. You can't go on a holiday. You can't go on no spree. But like, you can still water the crops, go and bust a line and come back tomorrow. Not with livestock, right? So you see, all of these things are intricacies of the agricultural sector. And we need the proper support systems. For example, the Ministry of Agriculture, Land and Fisheries, their offices usually open from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m., right? When a livestock farmer animal come into heat Friday evening, 4 o'clock, and he call, hey, I want some, one of the AI techs come and serve my goat, serve my sheep, serve them cows. Guess what? Work done. But his time now start, right? And without serving that animal, he would lose a couple hours, a couple weeks, right, into his production system, and that delay in production is feeding the animal, taking care of it for a whole other month for it to come back into heat to cope, you know, for some type of help. So these are some of the inefficiencies that we have in the sector. Yeah.
All right. You know, one never thought about it. Eh? Once you have livestock, it's very difficult for you to go on vacation.
You can't go nowhere. I tell you, as a past livestock farmer, you can't go nowhere, that is it.
Unless you have employees, then. If you have employees, maybe they can look at it.
And even if you have employees, you could run away, but what about them? And them facing the same thing, too?
No, well, when you take your sabbatical, and you take a weekend in Tobago, and, you know, your employees will work, and then when you come back, you could get them a little break, you know?
It's like a shift system.
It's like a shift system, but
it is very difficult to manage everything as a farmer. And then the one hustle products, for example, again, look livestock farmers. You know how it has something called NAMDEFCO that will help crop farmers sell their products and get them into wholesale markets and all of these things?
Mm-hmm.
Who helping livestock farmers? Which body or organization established to help livestock farmers market their products? None. That will livestock farmers had to be hustling on the side of the road.
Wow.
You understand?
All right, let's take a call. Hello, good morning.
A pleasant good morning, Davey, and dear guests, a pleasant good morning.
Mr. Ray,
I don't have a question, but I want to make a suggestion, and I want your guest to comment on it. I am suggesting that government should not give any subsidies to farmers. What I'm suggesting is that for those who want to do farming, whether it be agriculture or livestock, give loans to the ADB. So in other words, the ADB will make a profit. People will get soft loans that they could be able to carry on their business. Lease lands, and that when I say lease, I talk about maybe 5 years, 10 years, whatever it is, and provide the support services. The people must pay for the use of the land, the state lands, because we have quite a bit of arable lands, so that the state could get some money, and persons without lands will have lands to plant or whatever. Assist in creating a foreign market, so that there could be some export, right? They must pay the taxes because they're supposed to be making money with the follow-up services. The state will know whether they're doing it right or not. and they will provide employment, and they will also provide foreign exchange. So out of that simple venture, quite a bit can be achieved. I thank you, Enjoy.
Thanks for that caller. Really appreciate that level of thought process. So yes, the ADB is existing. They do give loans to agri entrepreneurs, farmers, agro processors, and all the other food related businesses. However, it is very difficult sometimes for farmers to satisfy all the documentation that is required. Something as simple as getting land tenureship, right, in public offices is very difficult. And when you do have those documents on your name, for example, the lease expired or it passed, right, and to get that transferred back on your name and, you know, renewed, that process takes months, sometimes even years. So here what? If you do have land tenureship on your name, how are you even getting to submit to the ADB or any financial institution, this is the land that I own or have ownership of to utilize for 30 years or 99 years? So this is one form of collateral, or this is one form of security, right? So simple intricacies like that will stall that whole process. In addition, when you go for $1 million loan to build two livestock pens, right? Usually the collateral in terms of financial is about 20%. So a farmer needs to get $200,000 upfront to access $1 million, right? These things are a bit difficult for farmers, right? We don't just pull out money from any and anywhere. So like I said, all the points are noted, really good, strong points. And I do totally 100% agree. We're trying to get some of our products exported, for example. I would prefer if we get some really nutritious products, light products, and high-value products, for example, herbs and spices, chocolate, and specialty fruits, right? Those type of products that I like to see exported out of the country to earn USD. But here's what? It further comes into play. You see, being so long a sector, I can tell you each of the holes in each of the subsectors, for example. How much times are your mommy support this bear? If it bear twice, there's plenty, right? That is an example of a tropical fruit. When you have such inconsistencies in supply just by season, right? How are you making that an exportable product, right? Same thing with piwa, right? Or even a kaimit, or any one of the tropical fruits, right? So you see, you have these things playing, and then we have to compete at an international level, which means that we have to invest in economies of scale and grow things at a larger scale and level so that it will make financial sense once it reach at the international level. And I just financially, we never speaking about quality, what type of support systems you need for storage, transportation, certification, food testing via lab testing, and all these other things. So like I say, the terms sound good, you know, but there's plenty of work behind the scenes. Yeah?
All right, let's take another call. Hello, good morning.
Talk is cheap, yes, good. A lot of people don't know. Hey, what's happening? ADB. ADB should be zero interest free for farmers, because farmers work hard work in a hot Sunday. And that should be interest free. Why you want interest for them poor farmers and them there? Make it zero interest free, yes, and give them a loan. Indian government earlier this year, I'm not sure about it. I think it's Indian government. This is Davey now. They have a hybrid coconut plant they bring down here for thousands of farmers. In 2 years, you'll get your coconut and you'll get more water than the coconuts have. We in Wallapil here, fighting all over the place, running all over the place to get this hybrid plant. I don't know which set of farmers get it, and who, and how much, and what kind of bribe must have passed. Listen to me. Yes, because we here never get any. And the president's still wondering where all them plants gone. The hybrid plants from India. 2 years, coconut. Check it out.
All right. I don't know what you're talking about, Riyad. One texter is saying to you, Riyad, that three starch mangoes, in some instances four, is $20. But six apples, six gala apples. We don't grow apples here.
It's $20 too.
Save $20 the mango.
Yeah, and I totally agree. I totally understand. And that is why I say we need support in the farming sector, right, for our local producers so that we could produce those commodities at more affordable prices. Those mega nations support their farmers and their partner. They make sure and do everything it takes to support them through the entire value chain so that they can get their products all around the world. Right? We have to do the same thing here.
All right. With that being said, one texter is saying, okay, so that is a different message. Another one is saying, can we do anything about the starch mangoes you just mentioned in relation to that of the apples? How can we make local produce cheaper? Give an example using mangoes.
There's a couple things.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So let me start from the beginning. We have to make sure and get the good genetic stuff, which we most likely, I think, have. Right? Good. Right? You replicate them, you graft them if you need. Good. So at least you speed up that process. We still have to think about other things. Let me start from the beginning. Acquisition of land is one. Right? Let me assume you have good lease land or you have some government land that you have tenantship for. Good. Thank God. You're good to go. The next step now. Let me look at getting proper drip irrigation methods, land preparation, plowing, rotovating, banking, proper drainage. You need irrigation to those plots regardless throughout the year, right? That comes at a separate cost. Then you need some amount of fertilizer or chemical sprays, even if you're jumping on the OMRI band. On the same natural usage, good, no problem. But those things still come at a cost. And you need to take care of that for the first maybe 3 to 4 years for you to start to get some type of substantive type of product, right? And then, even let's assume you'd reach that far and you get good products, we need to have it at scale. And when we have it at scale, we need to clearly define the processing line. How do we take it from 10 farmers or 20 farmers from here, put it in a cold storage, treat it properly so that we could take it to the US, to the UK, to wherever that needs it to obtain that premium price? You see, all of those things must be streamlined. And I was on I was on TV6 this morning, and one of the things that I did mention was that these government agencies, bodies, ministries all need to be in line with one national development goal as it relates to agriculture. So if you know this is the game plan for starch mangoes, everybody must be aligned. So when it reach the storage units, they wouldn't say, well, what is doing here? You understand? And have the producer out in the sun just waiting there for hours until they get a phone call and say, hey, that is your job. Make sure and put it, secure it, and it leaving at this time, right? So all of these agencies need to play an important role, right? Remember, the farmers can't do this alone. Yes, there are some big players in the private sector, but most of the country's farmers are small, older farmers, yeah?
Hmm. I'm not 100% clear, but we'll talk. Hello, good morning.
Good morning, Davey, and good morning to you. I heard a guest speak about marketing for livestock, but marketing for local produce and fruit and vegetables. I want to ask a guest, when last he took a walk to the Macoya market, which is supposed to be the farmer's market in Trinidad and Tobago? That market is a total mess, I would say. The market has been opening at 2 a.m. And let's say that that's very first instance. When a farmer attends his crop during the day, has to come and wake out for market to open at 2 a.m., finish sell his produce about 4, get back home, how could he attend to his crop the next day after waking up all night? Then when you get to the market, the traders at the market want to offer you a price that they want for your produce, not that what you want. So NAMDEFCO, who's supposed to be the agent for there, supposed to have a scheduled pricing for products. So the farmer could then project that if I plant 1,000 lettuce and I could get $5 for lettuce, then I have $5,000 that I can project at an average cost. So I can make an investment of $1,500 to make $5,000. However, you, when you go to the market, it is what the traders at the market want to pay you for your produce is what you have to agree with. And if you don't agree with it, they leave it there. And when it comes to 6 o'clock in the morning, when day is clear, then you have no choice. But then they come at a lower price.
Yeah, but caller, you know, I hear what you're saying, right? But what if the ask of the... this is no disrespect to any farmer. But what if the ask of the farmer doesn't match the consumer's pocket? What are they to do? I come to the market, I need to get this produce, but your price, what am I to do?
What I'm saying is not the consumer, you know. Remember, there are traders at the market. What do you call them? Middlemen.
Uh-huh.
Right, so they buy from the farmer and then they sell back to the retailer. The retailer will now sell back to the consumer.
Well,
but what I'm mm-hmm. saying is that I, as a farmer, will go, okay, so let's say I go to pumpkins and I say, okay, I want $3 for my pumpkin.
Mm-hmm.
The farmer is not going to pay me that. The farmer wants maybe $2. I get the farmer price is what determines the market price. Not that, and it shouldn't be the trader. It should be the farmer, because that's my produce, that's my goods. I produce it and I come in there to sell it for the price that I want it for.
All right, so that's one aspect. Let's look at the trickle along effect on it, right? So the farmer asks for $3 a pound for the pumpkin. Let's say the trader buys it at $3. The trader then has to sell it to a retailer at a higher cost to cover transport and little, and for him to even make a dollar for himself. So he sells it. He sells it at maybe a dollar 50 more. Just saying.
Mm-hmm.
Then the retailer now has to carry it up a bit more to the consumer. And depending on the ask of the farmer, and I said the ask, who regulates the ask of a farmer? Because you can't tell a laborer, for my skilled labor, you put in a price on my labor, I put a price on my labor, this is how I feel, this is what I feel I'm worth. So where is the regulatory board in place to determine the price of pumpkin, Sive, Christophine, Dasheen, you name it?
And this is my point.
Right.
Why don't we have scheduled pricing at the market? So therefore, a farmer can operate his farm as a business.
Rather than just
a vike.
Because that is how it appears. Now, I want to ask Riyadh while you're on the line. Riyadh, how do we determine what's the price for pumpkin, for example?
So,
how do you do that?
The caller was very strong in that comment and point, and I wish that mechanism was in place. But when I look around, everyone says it's a free market. So the farmer himself has to know if it's a good investment or not to even grow that commodity with his available resources. You know, some farmers could grow some commodities, others just can't based on what they have, based on how much finance they have, how much land space they have. So that is why you have to do proper business planning, cost-benefit analysis, and all of these other type of planning activities.
But that's
why you just produce something and then hope to get it sell.
But that's my point. So even when we produce it, at what juncture? All right. So the three of us on the phone line here, you buy your farm, I buy my farm, Riyadh, you buy yours.
Yeah.
And I decide I grow in pumpkin, you growing pumpkin, the caller growing
pumpkin.
Who decides I reach to the market? How do we determine now? Who is the deciding factor as to what the price per pound will be for the pumpkin?
I'll tell you, Davey, scarcity and glut decides the price.
Okay.
If all of you reach at the same time, that price will drop under the $2 or the $3.
So here's what I'm telling you.
Uh-huh.
If it's scarce, I can sell my pumpkin for $10.
Which happened last year, December.
And then if there's a glut, all three of us made a good crop, we can sell for 50 cents. At one point, I could run down to zero profit. I could run to 1,000% profit.
Well, that's the point I'm trying to make. So there's no regulatory board in place to determine what the price factors will be for farmers. But then even if you put a regulatory board in place to decide crop pricing,
It will trickle along straight onto the consumer. Because everybody knows.
But against what backdrop?
I can go to retail market, it's $5, and say I can get a lettuce of $5.
Mm-hmm,
because I know it will be between $4.50 and $5. I can get that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
right? As a consumer,
because
I can do that.
Even pimentos, at one point in time, you'll get.
It's $1,000 for a pound parcel.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then it will drop down to less but at times. So it makes me wonder.
If you understand my point, my point is that.
Regulation.
Farmers can operate their farm as a business with a business plan to maximize their profit so that we can have continuity. When a farmer doesn't make a profit in his or doesn't even break even in his farm, you know what is his problem now? To restart it.
That's the problem. Yeah.
To restart is his problem. How is he going to get the capital to restart his farm? And that's his dependent income. So you have a 5,000 in your pocket. You thinking if you take that and start a crop, or to hold a 5,000 in a pocket.
Yeah, correct.
Right. And then, of course, with natural disasters, we'll face farmers face natural disasters. And as Riyadh rightly said, our son now is not the son of 10 years or 5 years back.
Yeah, for real.
So farmers are facing a lot of disadvantage, and we are not. So I would like to see in the budget that some emphasis placed on farming as to regularizing the farming industry and put in some scheduled prices for farmers. So therefore, as a farmer, you can operate as a business entity and not just a vike farmer plant and hope to get a good price.
All right, thank you so much.
I'll listen off there.
Yeah, thank you so much. Let me just listen to this one.
Problem I have with the whole thing is that the farmer who might spend 4 months bringing a crop to market in that you have to do the land preparation, you know, the planting, the fertilizing, the insect repellent, and all those kinds of things. All the work involved in the harvest, the packing, and the bringing it to the market. My charge $3 a pound for something, and the middleman who buy it for $3 a pound, coming back and selling it back for $6. So he, the farmer has minus all his costs from that $3 a pound he make. And the middleman who only have that crop overnight for 24 hours, make $3 flush with low overhead costs.
Riyadh?
Yeah. That's a reality, and that's very true. I can't disagree with that because I used to hustle cantaloupe melons and honeydew melons right in the Macoya market, so I know. When I sell it for $3 wholesale, that's selling back for $6, still wholesale to some retailers right in the market there, overnight.
Wow.
No chilling needed, no cold storage, no... I package it in the correct box. So, harvesting it the night before, cleaning it, weighing it, everything.
So if we had to ask for at least two items and narrowing it down to two on a wish list or ask from the agricultural sector to see in this budget, what would that two items or two anomalies be in your wish list this morning that you'd like to see?
Right. So let me just, one for crops, one for livestock.
If
we could get some help on the cost of feed or feed subsidization cost for livestock farmers, and I support all livestock farmers for all subsectors.
Mm-hmm.
That is one wish list on that side. On the crop side, coordination of planning for certain crop commodities and price regulation is definitely one on the crop side, because crop farmers have it definitely harder to sell their products, right? That would be one for each of the major industries. If you had to ask Maria, where's your third? I'll say trying to get exportable agricultural products from each subsector out of the country to earn some USD. We need a nice, streamlined, easy process. And I say that plain out blank, easy process. You know why? When we have to get a health certificate by this ministry, we have to get phytosanitary certificate from this ministry, we have to get go by the trade license unit from this ministry. It is too tedious for farmers to make a top quality product to be running all around the place for 6 months, and after the documentation expire, rules change, lab testing gone through to get our products outside the borders. So if we could get an agency set up just to get our products out of the borders for us, partner, that is a win. That is a win.
Wow. I didn't even realize. And I hope my listening audience can appreciate what is being said this morning. Hello, good morning.
Good morning, Davey.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning to Mr. Mohammed there.
Morning.
Davey, one of the things with regards to the agriculture sector and prices, I listen to Plumeter, and there's a lot of myth when it comes to in terms of the price. There is no price per se, but a price is generated in the wholesale market via median. So, for example, Davey, if you are selling, let's say all of us have pumpkins. You are selling at 5, the other one is selling at 6, the other one is selling at 7. A median will be deprived from that, and that will become the base price as the wholesale price. So if you are going to sell back a supermarket, you will go to the NAMDEFCO website, and there's where the price is generated. Now, of course, this will be determined by supply and demand, right? So, of course, if I just using the price here for you. So to say that there isn't a price structure, there is a price structure, and that is determined through NAMDEFCO. With regard to the middleman now, it comes down to similar to the energy sector, Davey and Mr. Mohammed. We are price takers. We don't generate the price. So, for example, if you go to the market and you cannot stay in the market for the duration of the time, which is from 2 to 7, 2 in the morning, Davey, till 7, you have a middleman who will take the product from you, or the goods, the vegetables, from you. He will stay there, and mind you, he has been there since 8 o'clock in the night. Eh?
Mm-hmm.
So he will take that from you, and he will resell that product. So they are persons who are quite valuable in the market where it's concerned. The problem is we have to get an equilibrium price, and to maintain a price structure, we have to get foreign market. Right now, Davey, I spoke with an exporter last week. He's exporting pimentos and baigan, and this is going to Canada. The problem is, how do we get export TT NAMDESCO and others to come on board to get our product out of Trinidad and Tobago. And once that takes place, we are going to get an equilibrium price to the produce.
Well,
and
but, well, to add to what you're saying, it, for some reason, given that 90% of our consumption is imported goods, it seems to me that they look at it more lucrative to bring in the products rather than to export, rather than to send our products outside. Maybe the wait, the downtime or the growth time. My thing is, how do we get this expedited? How do we encourage more farmers so that we have different growth?
It's very easy, Davey. All you have to do, you have to drive the public sector investment program. That must be driven with some areas. The areas that you have to focus on is access roads. Once you have access roads, water retention pond for farmers, you have climate change technology for them, you are going to drive the agriculture sector, you get export markets, and you focus, your focus must be driven first on home. So you need to drive the prices down home. Persons are going to buy the product home as opposed to the foreign products that are coming into the country. Take, for example, tomatoes. People prefer to buy local tomatoes as opposed to foreign tomatoes. The only time that they go to buy foreign tomatoes is when the local price is ridiculously high. So that is something that you have to focus, you have to augment. And, of course, I'm hoping that the minister is going to do that. Another key area in the agriculture sector that we need to focus on is to move away from, a lot of people might flag me, but move away from the incentive program. We have spent close to $200 million, Davey, on incentives. There is nothing to reciprocate to the populace in terms of getting cheap food. So while there's personal development, persons who are lower on the lower ladder where it concerns with cassava and flour, Davey, a pound of cassava flour is going to cost you $25. If I am going to get a pound around $7, which one will I produce? Which one will I purchase, Davey?
I understand.
Yes. So that is something that we have to focus on. We have to move away from that, create the market outside, let the market flow, take away the incentives. However, the area that you're going to focus on is vehicles, machinery, and equipment. You could put a 40 or 50% tax exemption in it. And that is what's going to help us to drive the agriculture sector. I don't see us moving forward or getting results if we continue with the same method. And I have a lot of data that I could pump into this program this morning, but I will not do that, David. Thank you very much for giving me the opportunity. That's just my take.
All right. Thank you so much for sharing your thoughts this morning with us. Ooh, sorry about that feedback there. So, Riyad, in conclusion here this morning, one person is saying, why are we asking a farmer to do a business plan? That is where the government can use NAMDEVCO to deal with. Another one says, morning, in relevance to permits, license, and certificates, it can be done effortlessly if you engage the services of the customs of a customs broker. If exporters and importers are interested, they can contact me. And he gave a name, Akash Prasad.
That's good. Good initiative. Yeah, so totally noted. I agree with some of the points made this morning. Whether we really need to drive the sector going forward, and we need critical thinkers and all stakeholders on board, you know, and that is why sometimes when you have these stakeholder engagements, it's very important to note clearly what are the issues that are happening on the ground and at all levels, because that's the only way we could refine our policies and procedures to make sure we have a more stable sector. Yeah.
All right. With that being said, I want to thank you very much, Mr. Mohammed, for chatting with me this morning here on the Morning Rumble. A lot was said, and I do hope that government pay attention to the agricultural sector in the upcoming budget. Is a lot, eh? Everybody have a wish list, eh? So I thank you. Everybody have a wish list in this upcoming budget. So I thank you very much for chatting with me this morning, Riyad, and have yourself a great day. And we'll talk again in the not-too-distant future.
Thank you.
All right, bye-bye.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.